Sixth of the Dusk, the first draft.
Death hunted beneath the waves. Sixth saw it approach, though its details were hidden by the waters. A shadow wider than six narrow boats tied together, an enormous deep blackness within the deep blue. Sixth's hands tensed on his paddle, his heartbeat racing as he immediately sought out Kokurli. Fortunately, the bird sat in his customary place on the prow of the boat, idly biting at one clawed foot raised to his beak. The colorful bird lowered his foot and puffed out his feathers as if completely unmindful of the enormous shadow that approached. Sixth held his breath. He always did, even still, when unfortunate enough to run across one of these things in the open ocean. He did not know what they looked like beneath those waves. He hoped to never find out. The shadow drew closer, almost to the boat now. A school of thin fish passing nearby jumped into the air in a silvery wave, spooked by the shadow's approach. The terrified fish showered back into the water with a sound like rain. The shadow did not deviate. The thin fish were too small a meal to interest it. The boat's occupants, however, it passed directly underneath. Zack sat on Sixth's shoulder. The second bird seemed to have some sense of the danger. Creatures like the shadow did not hunt by smell or sight, but by sensing the minds of prey. Sixth glanced at Kokurli again. There was a reason most sailors clipped their aviar's wings, or at least tied them down. Sixth spurned such practices, but at times like this, with a shadow passing directly beneath, so large that it could have swallowed his whole boat, he wondered. The boat rocked softly, the jumping thin fish stilled. Had the shadow stopped? Hesitated? Did it sense them? Kokurli's protective aura had always been enough before, but the shadow slowly vanished beneath. It had turned to swim downward, Sixth realized. In moments, he could make out nothing through the waters, just that endless deep. He hesitated, then forced himself to get out his mask. It was a new device he had acquired only two supply trips back, a glass faceplate with some kind of leather, perhaps a sheep's bladder or stomach, on the sides. He placed it on the water's top and leaned down, looking into the waters. They became as clear to him as the water of an undisturbed lagoon. Nothing, just the blue deep.
Fool man.
He tucked away the mask and got out his paddle.
Didn't you just think to yourself that you never wanted to see one of those?
Still, as he started paddling again, he knew that he'd spend most of the rest of this trip feeling as if the shadow were down there, following him, lurking in those endless depths. That was the nature of the waters. You never knew what lurked there. You probably didn't want to. He continued on his journey, paddling his outrigger canoe and reading the lapping of the waves to judge his position. Those waves were as good as a compass for any trained in wayfinding. Once they would have been good enough for any of the Elykin, his people. Anymore, just the trappers learned the old arts. Though even he did carry one of the newest compasses, wrapped up in his pack with a set of sea maps from the last surveys. His mother had said,
"You cannot stop times from changing any more than you can stop the surf from rolling."
It was not long after the accounting of tides before he caught sight of the first island. Sori was a small island in the Pantheon and the most commonly visited. Its name meant child. Sixth remembered well training on her shores with his uncle. It had been long since he'd burned an offering to Sori, despite how well she had treated him during his youth. Perhaps a small offering would not be out of line. Pat-ji would not grow jealous. One could not be jealous of Sori, the least of the islands. Just as every trapper was welcome on Sori, every other island in the Pantheon was said to be affectionate of her. Be that as it may, Sori did not contain much in the way of valuable game. Sixth continued rowing, moving down the archipelago his people knew as the Pantheon. From a distance, this archipelago was not so different from the home islands of the Elykin, now a three-week trip behind him, from a distance. Up close, they were very, very different. Sixth rode past Sori and then her three cousins, the first of the closed islands. He had never set foot on them. In fact, he had not landed on many of the 40-some islands in the Pantheon. A trapper chose one island and worked there all his life. To do otherwise was foolhardy. He saw no other shadows beneath the waves, but he kept watch. Not that he could do much to protect himself. Kokurli did all of that work as he roosted happily at the prow of the ship, eyes half closed. Sixth had fed him seed before the approach. Kokurli did like it so much more than dried fruit. Nobody knew why beasts like the shadows only lived here in the waters near the Pantheon. Why not travel across the seas to the Ilokin Islands or the mainland, where food would be plentiful and Aviar like Kokurli were far more rare? Once, these had not been questions men asked. The seas were what they were. Those days had passed. Now men poked and prodded into everything. They asked why. They said, "We should explain it." Sixth shook his head, dipping his paddle into the water. That sound had been his companion for most of his days. He understood it far better than he did the speech of men. After the cousins, most trappers would have turned north or south, continuing along the wings of the Pantheon until reaching their chosen island. Sixth continued forward into the heart of the archipelago until a large shape loomed before. Pachi, largest of the islands. It towered taller than any of the others, like a wedge rising from the sea. A place of inhospitable peaks, sharp cliffs, and deep jungle.
"Hello, old friend. Hello, father."
Sixth raised his paddle and placed it in the boat. He sat for a time, chewing on fish from last night's catch, feeding scraps to Sack. The black-plumed bird ate them with an air of solemnity. Kokurli continued to sit on the prow. He would be eager. Sack never seemed to grow eager about anything. Approaching Pachi was not a simple task, even for one who trapped his shores. The boat continued its dance with the waves as Sixth considered which landing to make. Eventually, he put the fish away, then dipped his paddle back into the waters. Those waters were still deep and blue, despite the proximity to the island. Some members of the Pantheon had sheltered bays and gradual beaches that one could wade in. Pachi had no patience for such foolishness. His beaches were rocky, and the drop-offs from them were so steep that deep water began only a few steps out. You were never safe on his shores. In fact, the beaches were the most dangerous part of a very dangerous place. There, not only could the horrors of the land get to you, but you were still within reach of the deep's creatures. Sixth's uncle had cautioned him about this time and time again. Only a fool slept on the shores of Pachi. The tide was with him, and he avoided being caught in any of the swells that would crush him against those stern rock faces. Sixth approached what passed for a beach on Pachi's shores, a partially sheltered expanse of stone crags and outcroppings. Kokurli immediately fluttered off toward the trees. Sixth immediately glanced at the waters beneath. No shadows. Still, he felt naked as he hopped out of the ship and pulled it up onto the rocks, warm water washing against his legs. Sack remained in her place on Sixth's shoulder. Nearby in the surf, Sixth saw a corpse bobbing in the water.
"Beginning your visions early, my friend."
He glanced at Sack. The Aviar usually waited until they'd fully landed before bestowing her blessing. The black-feathered bird just watched the waves. Sixth continued his work. The body he saw in the surf was his own. It told him to avoid that section of water. Perhaps there was a spiny anemone that would have trapped him, or perhaps a deceptive undercurrent. Sax's visions did not always show such detail. They gave only warning. Sixth got the boat out of the water, then detached the floats, tying them more securely onto the main part of the canoe. Following that, he worked the vessel carefully up the shore, mindful not to scrape the hull on sharp rock. He would need to hide the canoe in the jungle. If another trapper discovered it, Sixth would be trapped on the island for several extra weeks preparing his spare. That would... He stopped as his heels struck something soft as he backed up the shore. He glanced down, expecting a pile of seaweed. Instead, he found a damp piece of cloth.
"A shirt?"
Sixth held it up, then noticed other, more subtle signs across the shore. Broken lengths of sanded wood, bits of paper floating in an eddy.
"Those fools!"
He returned to moving his canoe. Rushing was never a good idea on a Pantheon island. He did step more quickly, however. As he reached the tree line, he caught sight of his corpse hanging from a nearby tree. Those were cutaway vines lurking in the fern-like treetop. He hefted a large stone from the beach, then tossed it at the tree. Sure enough, the vines dropped like a net, full of stinging barbs. They would take a few hours to retract back up. Sixth pulled his canoe over and hid it in the underbrush near the tree. Hopefully, other trappers would be smart enough to stay away from the cutaway vines, and therefore wouldn't stumble over his boat. Before placing the final camouflaging fronds, Sixth pulled out his pack. Though the centuries had changed a trapper's duties very little, the modern world did offer its benefits. Instead of sandals, Sixth tied on sturdy boots. Instead of a simple wrap that left his legs and chest exposed, he wore thick trousers with pockets on the legs and a buttoning shirt to protect his skin against sharp branches or leaves. And instead of a shark-toothed club, he bore a machete of the finest steel. His pack contained luxuries like a steel-hooked rope, a lantern, and a fire starter that created sparks simply by pressing the two handles together. He looked little like the trappers in the paintings back home. He didn't mind. He'd rather stay alive. He left the canoe, shouldering his pack, machete sheathed at his side. Sack moved to his other shoulder. Before leaving the beach, Sixth paused, looking at the image of his translucent corpse still hanging from unseen vines at the tree. Could he really have ever been foolish enough to be caught by cutaway vines? Near as he could tell, Sack only showed him plausible deaths. He liked to think that most were fairly unlikely. A vision of what could have happened if he'd been careless, or if his uncle's training hadn't been so extensive. Once, Sixth had stayed away from any place where he saw his corpse. It wasn't bravery that drove him to do the opposite now. He just needed to confront the possibilities. He needed to be able to walk away from this beach knowing that he could still deal with cutaway vines. If he avoided danger, he would soon lose his skills. He could not rely on Sack too much. Sixth turned and trudged across the rocks along the coast. Doing so went against his instincts. He normally wanted to get inland as soon as possible. Unfortunately, he could not leave without investigating the origin of the debris he had seen earlier. He had a strong suspicion of where he would find their source. Kokurli flapped out of a tree nearby and winged over the beach. His protection would not be as strong as it would be if he were close, but that shouldn't matter. The beasts that hunted mines on the island were not as large as the shadows of the ocean, and so long as Kokurli remained somewhat close, Sixth and Sack would be invisible. About a half hour up the coast, he found the remnants of a large camp. Broken boxes, fraying ropes laying half submerged in tidal pools, ripped canvas, broken pieces of wood that might once have been walls. Kokurli landed on a broken pole nearby. There were no signs of his corpse nearby. That could mean that the area wasn't immediately dangerous. It could also mean that whatever might kill him here would swallow the corpse whole. Sixth trod lightly on wet stones at the edges of the broken campsite.
No. Larger than a campsite.
He ran his fingers over a broken chunk of wood, stenciled with the words, Northern Interests Trading Company, a powerful mercantile force from his homeland. He had told them. He had told them.
Do not camp, Dupaji. Fools. And they had camped here on the beach itself. Was nobody in that company capable of listening?
Sixth picked his way through the remnants of the camp. How long had it been? He stopped beside a group of gouges in the rocks, as wide as his upper arm, running some 10 paces long. They led toward the ocean.
Shadow, one of the deep beasts.
His uncle had spoken of seeing one once from a distance. An enormous something that had exploded up from the depths. It had killed a dozen krell who had been chewing on oceanside weeds before retreating into the waters with its feast. Sixth imagined this camp on the rocks, bustling with men unpacking boxes, preparing to build the fort they had described to him. But where was their ship? The great steam-powered vessel with an iron hull they claimed could rebuff the attacks of even the deepest of shadows. Did it now defend the ocean bottom, a home for thin fish and octopi? There were no survivors, nor even any corpses that Sixth could see. The beach was too dangerous. He pulled back to the slightly safer locale of the jungle's edge. Here he scanned the foliage, looking for signs that people had passed this way. This attack was recent, within the last day or so. The company really had beat him to the islands, despite his head start. He'd been certain they'd listen to reason. A dozen different trappers had spoken to them.
Fools!
He absently gave Sack a seed from his pocket as he located a series of broken fronds leading into the jungle. So there were survivors. At least one. Maybe as many as a half dozen. They had each chosen to go in different directions, in a hurry.
Running from the attack.
Running through the jungles was a good way to get dead. These company types, they thought themselves rugged. They thought themselves prepared. They were wrong. He'd spoken to a number of them, trying to persuade as many of their trappers as possible to abandon the voyage. Well, these survivors were likely dead now. He should leave them to their fates. Except, the thought of it, outsiders on Pachi.
Oh.
Well, It made him shiver in something that mixed disgust and anxiety. They were here. It was wrong. These islands were sacred, the trappers their priests. Sixth whipped his machete about, leveling it, reaching into his pocket for his sling. It was not a refugee who left the bushes, or even a predator, not a common one at least. A group of small, mouse-like creatures crawled out, sniffing the air. Sack had never liked Meekers. The three Meekers sent to Dusk.
Food?
It was the most rudimentary of thoughts, projected directly into his mind. Though he did not want the distraction, he did not pass up the opportunity to fish out some dried meat for the Meekers. As they huddled around it, sending him gratitude, he saw their sharp teeth and the single pointed fang at the tips of their mouths. His uncle had told him that once Meekers had been dangerous to men. One bite was enough to kill. Over the centuries, the little creatures had grown accustomed to trappers. They had minds, thoughts beyond that of dull animals. Almost, he found them as intelligent as the aviar. If they were intelligent, they could be trained, perhaps.
You remember?
He sent them through thoughts.
You remember your task?
Once they had been dangerous to men. Trappers ignored them. Sixth figured that maybe one of these little beasts could provide an unexpected surprise for one of his rivals. He had been cultivating small groups of them across the island. They'd been frightened of the company and its many people. But perhaps...
Have you seen another?
My service!
Intelligent, but not that intelligent. Sixth turned back to the forest. After a moment's deliberation, he found himself striking inland, following one of the refugee trails. He chose the one that made him the most nervous, the one that looked as if it would pass uncomfortably close to one of his own safe camps deep within the jungle. Sixth passed out of the sun and beneath the jungle's canopy. It was hotter here, despite the shade, comfortably sweltering. Kokurli joined him, winging up ahead to a branch where a few lesser aviars sat. Kokurli towered over them. An aviar raised around people never quite fit back in among their own kind. The same could be said of a man raised around aviar. Sixth followed the trail left by the refugee, expecting to stumble over the man's corpse at any moment. He did not, though his own dead body did occasionally appear along the path. He saw it lying half-eaten in the mud or tucked away in a fallen log with only the foot showing. He could never grow too comfortable with Sack on his shoulder. That was one primary reason he preferred her to other aviar. It didn't matter if Sack's visions were truth or fiction. The constant reminder of how Patji treated the unwary was enough. It kept Sixth alert, and that kept him alive. He fell into the familiar but not comfortable lope of a pantheon trapper. Alert, wary, careful not to brush leaves that could carry biting insects, cutting with the machete only when necessary, lest he leave a trail another could follow. Listening, aware of his aviar at all times, never outstripping Kokurli or letting him drift too far ahead. The man he tracked did not fall to the common dangers of the island. He cut across game trails rather than following them. The surest way to run across predators was to fall in with their food. The refugee did not know how to mask his trail, but neither did he blunder into the nest of fire snap lizards, or brush the deathweed bark, or step into the patch of hungry mud. Was this another trapper, perhaps?
A youthful one, not fully trained?
That seemed something the company would try. Experienced trappers were beyond recruitment. None would be foolish enough to guide a group of clerks and merchants around the islands. But a youth who had not yet chosen his island? A youth who, perhaps, resented being required to practice only on Sori until his mentor determined his apprenticeship complete? Sixth had felt that way 10 years ago, when nearing the end of his uncle's training. So the company had hired itself a trapper at last. That would explain why they had grown so bold as to come, despite the counsel of men like Sixth.
But Patji itself!
Sixth knelt beside the bank of a small stream. It had no name, at least not one that Sixth had given it, but it was familiar to him.
Why would they come here?
The answer was simple. They were merchants. The biggest, to them, would be the best. Why waste time on lesser islands?
I not come for the father himself.
The refugee had stopped by the river. Sixth had gained time on the man, or rather, the youth.
Yes, that footprint.
Judging by the depth that had sunk in the mud, Sixth could imagine the boy's weight and height.
16, perhaps? Certainly not fully grown. Could he be younger?
Trapper's apprenticed at 10, but he could not imagine even the company trying to recruit one so ill-trained.
Perhaps 2 hours gone.
The boy's path continued on toward Sixth Safe Camp.
How?
He had never spoken of it to anyone else. Perhaps this youth was apprenticing under one of the other trappers who visited Pachi. One of them could have found his safe camp and mentioned it. Sixth crossed the stream and continued. Each member of the Pantheon supported a variety of trappers. In 10 years on Pachi, he had only seen another trapper in person a handful of times. On each occasion, they had both turned and gone a different direction without saying a word. It was the way of such things. Trappers would not attack one another directly unless defending a camp. Of course, they would try to kill one another. They just didn't do it in person. Better to let Pachi claim rivals than to directly stain one's hands with their blood.
This one, though.
This one was making directly for Sixth Safe Camp. If he really was a youth, he might not know the proper way of things. Perhaps he had come seeking help, afraid to go to one of his master's safe camps for fear of punishment, or...
No, best to avoid pondering it too much.
Sixth already had a mind full of spurious conjectures. He would find what he would find. He finally approached his safe camp as evening settled upon the island. Two of his tripwires were cut. That was not surprising. Those were meant to be obvious. He crept forward, passing the death ant crack in the ground. It had been stoppered with a smoldering twig. The nightwind fungi that Sixth had spent years cultivating here had been smothered in water to keep the spores from escaping. And the next two tripwires, the ones not intended to be obvious, were also cut.
Nice work, kid.
Someone really needed to teach the boy how to move without being trackable, though. The youth had left more footprints, broken stems, and other signs than a mainlander might have if...
Hello?
Sixth froze, then looked up. A woman hung from the tree branches above, trapped in a net made of jelly wire vines. They left someone numb, unable to move.
A woman. The smaller footprint. Lighter step.
I want to make it perfectly clear. I have no intention of stealing your birds or infringing upon your territory.
Sixth squinted in the dimming light. He recognized this woman. She was one of the clerks who had been at his meetings with the company.
You cut my tripwires.
Words felt odd in his mouth, the result of weeks without speaking.
Yes, I did. I assumed you could replace them. Sorry?
Sixth settled back. The woman rotated slowly in her net, and he noticed an aviar clinging to their outside. The bird had subdued white and green plumage. A streamer, which was a breed that did not live on Pachi. He did not know much about them. The setting sun cast shadows, the sky darkening. Soon he would need to hunker down for the night and await its passing. The jungle was even more deadly at night than it was at day, for that was when the most dangerous of predators came out.
I promise.
What was her name? He believed it had been told to him, but he did not recall. Something untraditional.
I really don't want to steal from you. You remember me, don't you? We met back in the company hall. Please, I'd really rather not be hung by my ankles from a tree, slathered with blood to attract predators, if it's all the same to you.
You are not a trapper.
Well, no. You may have noticed my gender.
There have been female trappers.
One female trapper. Yalani the Brave. I've heard her story 100 times. You may find it odd to know that almost every society has its myth of the female role reversal. She goes to war dressed as a man, or leads her father's armies into battle, or lives alone on an island just like any man. I'm convinced that such stories exist so that parents can tell their daughters, you are not Yalani.
This woman spoke.
A lot.
People did that back on the Ilikin Islands. Her skin was dark, like his, and she had the sound of his people. The slight accent to her voice, he had heard it more and more when visiting the home isles. It was the accent of one who was educated.
Can I get down? I cannot feel my hands. It is unsettling.
What is your name? I have forgotten it.
This was too much speaking. It hurt his ears. This place was supposed to be soft.
Vathi.
That's right.
It was an improper name. Not a reference to her birth order, but a name like the mainlanders used. That was not uncommon among his people now. It had something to do with the visits from the ones above. He walked over and took the rope from the nearby tree, then lowered the net. The woman's aviar flapped away as she hit the ground, a bundle of dark curls and green linen skirts. She stumbled to her feet, shaking numb hands and quivering, an after effect of the vine skin poison.
So, no ankles and blood?
That is a story mothers tell to children. It is not something we actually do.
Oh.
If you had been another trapper, I would have killed you directly, rather than leaving you to revenge yourself upon me. Come, step where I step.
Vati shook a small pack from the vines and straightened her skirts. She wore a tight vest over the top of them, and the pack had some kind of metal tube sticking out of it.
A map case?
As he led the way, she followed, and she did not attempt to attack him when his back was turned. Darkness was coming upon them. Fortunately, his safe camp was ahead, and he knew by heart the steps to approach along its path. As they walked, Kokurli fluttered down and landed on the woman's shoulder. Sixth stopped, turning. The woman's own AVR had moved down her dress, away from Kokurli, to cling near her bodice.
Is this yours? But of course, the one on your shoulder is not AVR.
Sax settled back, puffing up her feathers. No, she was not AVR. At least, her species was not. Sixth continued to lead the way.
I have never seen a trapper carry a bird who is not from the islands.
It was not a question. Sixth, therefore, felt no need to reply. This safe camp, he had three total on the island, though this was the largest, lay atop a short hike following a twisting trail. Getting to it either required climbing this single path and exposing oneself to the traps, or somehow coming down the cliff above. At the top of the trail lay a small stand of trees, the largest of which held aloft a single room structure. Trees were one of the safer places to sleep on Patji. The treetops were the domain of the aviar, and most of the big predators all walked. Sixth lit his lantern, then held it up, letting the orange light bathe his home.
Up!
She hesitated, then looked out into the darkening jungle. By the lantern light, he saw that the whites of her eyes were red from lack of sleep. She looked exhausted, despite the unconcerned smile she gave him before climbing up the stakes he'd planted in the tree.
How did you know?
Fathi hesitated, near to the trap door leading into his home.
No, what?
Where my safe camp was. Who told you?
I followed the sound of water.
She nodded toward the small spring that bubbled out of the mountainside here.
When I found traps, I knew I was coming the right way.
Sixth frowned. That was impossible. One could not hear this water. And the stream vanished only a few hundred yards away, resurfacing in an unexpected location. Following it here, that would be virtually impossible. So she was lying, or was she just lucky?
You wanted to find me.
I wanted to find someone.
Vati pushed open the trap door and climbed up into the building.
I figured that the trapper would be my only chance for survival.
Above, she stepped up to one of the netted windows.
This is nice. Very roomy for a shack on a mountainside in the middle of a deadly jungle on an isolated island surrounded by monsters.
Sixth climbed up, holding the lantern in his teeth. The room at the top was perhaps 4 paces square, tall enough to stand in, but only barely.
Shake out those blankets.
Sixth nodded toward the stack and set down the lantern.
Then lift every cup or bowl on the shelf and check inside of them.
What am I looking for?
Dead ants, scorpions, spiders, blood scratches.
Sixth shrugged, putting Sack on her perch by the window.
Better to find them now than when sleeping. The room is built to be tight, but this is Patji. The father likes surprises.
As she hesitantly set aside her pack and got to work, Sixth continued up a ladder to check the roof of his structure. There, a group of bird-sized boxes lay arranged in a double row. Kokurli landed on top of one. Sixth climbed out to check each bird for hurt wings or feet. These aviar pairs were his life's work. The chicks each one hatched became his primary stock in trade. Yes, he would trap on the island, trying to find as many nests and wild chicks as he could get, but that was never as efficient as raising nests.
Your name was Sixth, wasn't it?
It is.
Large family.
An ordinary family?
Or so it had once been. His father had been a 12th, and his mother an 11th.
Sixth of what?
Of the dusk.
So you were born in the evening. I've always found the traditional name so, descriptive.
What a meaningless comment. Why do home islers feel the need to speak all of the time, particularly when there is nothing to say?
He moved on to the next nest, checking the two drowsy birds inside for wounds, then inspecting their droppings. An aviar raised around people, particularly one that had lent its talent to a person at an early age, would always see people as part of their flock. These birds were not his companions, like Sak and Kokurli, but they were still special to him. He had raised each one and had chosen to keep them for breeding rather than take them back to the home isles for sale. Vathi stuck her head up out of the trapdoor behind him.
No insects in the blankets.
The cups?
I'll get to those in a moment. So, these are your breeding pairs, are they?
Obviously they were, so he didn't need to reply. She watched him check them. He felt her eyes on him.
Why did your company ignore the advice we gave you? Coming here was obviously a disaster.
He turned to her.
Yes, this whole expedition will likely be a disaster. One that takes us a step closer to our goal.
He checked Sisisru next, working by the light of the now rising moon.
Foolish.
Vathi folded her arms before her on the roof of the building, torso still disappearing into the lit square of a trapdoor below.
Do you think that our ancestors learned to wayfind on the oceans without experiencing a few disasters along the way? Ships lost, people vanishing on the waves, or what of the first trappers? You have knowledge passed down for generations, knowledge earned through trial and error. If the first trappers had considered it too foolish to come explore, where would you be?
They were single men, well-trained, not a ship full of clerks and dock workers.
The world is changing, Sixth of the Dust. The ones above, the technology we have discovered, the people of the land grow hungry for aviar companions. That things were once restricted to the very wealthy can be within the reach of ordinary people. We've learned so much, yet the aviar is still an enigma. Why don't chicks raised on the home isles bestow talents? Why?
Foolish arguments.
Sixth put Sisisru back into her nest.
I do not wish to hear them again. You may sleep in my safe camp tonight.
And then what? You turn me out into the jungle to die?
You survived well on your way here.
She was not a trapper. A scholar should not have been able to do what she did.
You will probably survive.
I got lucky. I should be dead. I walked a few hours upstream to find this place. I'd never make it across the entire island.
Across the island?
To the main company camp.
There are more of you?
Of course. You didn't think...
What happened? Now who is the fool? You should have asked this first.
Talking. He had never been good with it, even before becoming a trapper. She shied away from him, eyes widening. Did he look dangerous? Perhaps he had barked that last question forcefully.
We set up camp on the far beach. We have two iron hulls armed with cannons watching the waters. Those that can take on even a deep walker if they have to. 200 soldiers, half that number in scientists and merchants. We're determined to find out once and for all why the Aviar must be born on one of the Pantheon Islands to be able to bestow talents. One team came down this direction to scout sites to place other fortresses. The company is determined to hold Pachi against other interests. I thought the smaller expedition a bad idea, but had my own reasons for wanting to circle the island. So I went along. And then, the Deep Walker.
She looked sick. Sixth had almost stopped listening.
200 soldiers?
On his island? Crawling across Pachi like ants on a fallen piece of fruit.
Unbearable!
He thought of the quiet jungle broken by the sounds of their racketous voices.
The sound of humans yelling at each other, clanging on metal, stomping about like a city.
A flurry of dark feathers announced Sak coming up from below and landing on the lip of the trapdoor beside Vathi. The black-plumed bird limped across the roof toward Sixth, stretching her wings, showing off the scars on her left. Even flying a dozen feet was a chore for her. Sixth reached down to scratch her neck, feeling stunned. It was happening, an invasion. He had to find a way to stop it.
Somehow.
I'm sorry, Sixth. The trappers are one of my areas of scholarship. I've read of your ways, and I respect them. But this was going to happen someday. The Aviar are too valuable to leave in the hands of a couple hundred eccentric woodsmen. They are a resource that we must protect.
The chiefs?
All 20 chiefs in council agreed to this plan. I was there. If the Ilikan do not secure these islands and tame them, someone else will.
Sixth stared out into the night.
Go and make certain there are no insects in the cups below.
But...
Go and make certain there are no insects in the cups below!
The woman retreated into the room, leaving him with his aviar. He continued to scratch Sak on the neck, seeking comfort in the familiar motion and in her presence. Dared he hope that the shadows would prove too deadly for the company and its iron-hulled ships? Vathi seemed confident.
She did not tell me why she joined the scouting group.
She had seen a shadow, witnessed it, destroying her team, but had still managed the presence of mind to find his camp. She was a strong woman. He would need to remember that. She was also a company type, as removed from his experience as a person could get. Soldiers, craftsmen, even kings he could understand. But these soft-spoken scribes who had quietly conquered the world with a sword of commerce, they baffled him.
Father, what do I do?
Pachi gave no reply. Well, none beyond the normal sounds of night on the island. At night, the Aviar slept, and that gave opportunity to the most dangerous of the island's predators. In the distance, he heard a night maw. In his hands, Sak spread her wings, leaning down, head darting back and forth. The sound always made her tremble. In truth, it did the same to Sixth. He started to rise, placing Sak on his shoulder. He turned and almost stumbled as he saw his corpse at his feet. He came alert immediately. There wasn't supposed to be anything in his safe camp that could kill him. What was it?
Vines in the tree branches? A spider dropping quietly from above? Something larger?
On Pachi, any one of 100 different animals could kill a man in a heartbeat. Sixth had not heard Sak screech in years. All around, wild Aviar squawked. Sixth spun about, holding his hands to his ears, eyes wide as corpses appeared around him. His own body, eyes staring dead, appearing, vanishing. They piled high, one atop another, some bloated, some bloody, some skeletal, haunting him. Dozens upon dozens. He dropped to his knees. That put him eye to eye with one of the corpses. Only this one was not quite dead. Blood dripped from its lips as it tried to speak, mouthing words that Sixth did not understand. It vanished. They all vanished. All of the corpses, every last one. He turned about, wild, but saw none of them. He felt tense, as if at any moment a shadow would explode from the blackness around his camp and consume him. He anticipated it, felt it coming. He wanted to run somewhere. What had that been? In all of his years with Sak, he had never seen anything like it.
What could have upset all of the area at once in that way? What had they felt?
Was it something about the night maw he had heard?
Don't be foolish. This was different. Different from anything you've seen. Different from anything that has been seen on Pachi. But what?
What had changed? Sak had not settled down like the others. She stared northward, toward where Vathi had said the main camp of invaders was setting up. Sixth stood up, then clambered down into the room below, Sak on his shoulder.
What are your people doing?
Vathi spun. She had been looking out of the window, northward. He took her by the front of her vest, pulling her toward him in a two-fisted grip, meeting her eyes from only a few inches away.
What are your people doing?
Her eyes widened, and he could feel her tremble in his grip, though she set her jaw and held his gaze. Scribes were not supposed to have grit like this. He had seen them scribbling away in their windowless rooms. Sixth tightened his grip on her vest, pulling the fabric so it dug into her skin.
Release me, and we will speak.
He hadn't realized he'd lifted her off the ground. She backed away, putting as much space between them as the room would allow. He stalked to the window, looking through the mesh screen at the night. His corpse dropped from the roof above, and he stepped back, worried that it was happening again. It didn't. Not the same way as before. However, when he turned back into the room, his corpse lay in the corner, bloody lips parted, eyes staring sightlessly. The danger, whatever it was, had not passed. Vathi had sat down on the floor, holding her head, trembling. Had he frightened her that soundly? She did look tired, exhausted. She wrapped her arms around herself, and when she looked at him, there was a cast to her eyes that hadn't been there before, as if she were regarding a wild animal let off of its chain. That seemed fitting.
What do you know of the ones above?
They live in the stars. They claim that we once did too.
We, at the company, have been meeting with them. We don't understand them, at least not their ways. They look like us. At times, they talk like us, but they have rules, laws that they won't explain. They refuse to sell us their marvels, but in like manner, they seem forbidden from taking things from us, even in trade.
That is fine. They are not of us, no matter what they look like. If they leave us alone, we will be better for it.
You haven't seen the things they can do. We have barely worked out how to create ships that can sail on their own against the wind. I thought that development to be amazing until the ones above arrived. They can sail the skies, sail the stars themselves. They know so much, and they won't tell us any of it.
She shook her head, reaching into the pocket of her skirt.
They are after something, Sixth. Their laws forbade them from contacting us until we were able to harness steam on our own. Now they can speak to us, but their laws won't let them teach us. If that is the case, what interest do we hold for them? From what I've heard them say, there are many worlds like ours with cultures that cannot sail the stars. We are not unique, yet the ones above come back time and time again. They do want something. You can see it in their eyes.
What is that?
Sixth nodded to the thing she took from her pocket. It rested in her palm like the shell of a clam, but had a mirror-like face on the top.
It is a machine, like a clock, only it never needs to be wound, and it shows things.
What things?
The location of Aviar.
What?
It's like a map. It points the way to Aviar.
That's how you found my camp?
Yes.
She rubbed her thumb across the machine's surface.
We aren't supposed to have this. It was the possession of an emissary sent to work with us, but he died. The death was natural. He choked while eating. They can die, it appears, even of mundane things. That changed how I view them. The others have asked after his machines, and we will have to return them soon. But this tells us what they are after. The Aviar. The ones above are always fascinated with him. I think they want to find a way to trade for the birds, a way their laws will allow. They hint that we might not be safe, that not everyone above follows their laws.
But why did the Aviar react like they did just now?
Sixth turned back to the window.
Why did I see what I saw? What I'm still seeing to an extent.
His corpse was there, wherever he looked, slumped by a tree outside, in the corner of the room, hanging out of the trapdoor in the roof.
Sloppy.
He should have closed that. Sock had pulled into his hair like she did when a predator was near.
There is a second machine.
That's right. She had said machines earlier.
More than one. Where?
On our ship.
The direction the Aviar had looked.
It's much larger. This one in my hand is limited in what it can do. The larger one, it can create an enormous map, one of an entire island, then write out a paper with a copy of that map. That map will include a dot marking every area.
And?
And we were going to turn on the machine tonight. It takes hours to get ready, like an oven growing hot, before it's ready to draw its map for us. The schedule was to turn it on tonight, just after sunset, so we could use it in the morning.
The others, they'd use it without you?
Happily. Captain Eusto probably did a dance when I didn't return from scouting. He's been worried I would take too much of the credit for this expedition. But the machine isn't harmful. It merely locates Aviar. You don't need to worry so much.
Did it do that before? When you last used it? Did it draw the attention of all the Aviar? Discomfort then?
Well, no. But the moment of discomfort has passed, hasn't it? I'm sure it's nothing.
Nothing.
Sok quivered on his shoulder. Sixth saw death all around him. The moment they had used that machine, the corpses had piled up. If they used it again, the results would be horrible. Sixth knew it. He could feel it.
We're going to stop them.
What? Tonight?
Yes.
Sixth walked to a small hidden cabinet in the wall. He pulled it open and began to pick through the supplies inside. A second lantern, extra oil. He would need those.
That's insane. Nobody travels the islands at night.
I've done it once before, with my uncle.
His uncle had died on that trip.
You can't be serious, Sixth. The Night Maws are out. I've heard them.
Traveling quickly and cutting across the center of the island, we can be to your camp by morning. We can stop them from using the above machine again.
But why would we want to?
Because if we don't, it will destroy the island.
You can't know that. Why do you think you know that?
Come on.
He walked to the hatch and pulled it open. Vali rose, but pressed back against the wall.
I'm staying here.
They won't believe me. You will have to tell them to stop. You are coming.
Vathi licked her lips in what seemed to be a nervous habit. She glanced to the sides, looking for escape, then back at him. Right then, Sixth noticed his corpse hanging from the pegs in the tree beneath him.
What was that?
Nothing.
You keep glancing to the sides. What do you think you see, Sixth?
We're going, now.
You've been alone on the island for a long time. You're upset because something unexpected has happened in our arrival. You aren't thinking clearly. I understand.
Sok, show her.
The bird launched from his shoulder, flapping across the room, landing on Vathi. She turned to the bird, frowning. She fell to her knees. Vathi pulled back against the wall, eyes darting from side to side, mouth working but no words coming out. Sixth left her to it for a short time, then raised his arm. Sok returned to him on black wings, dropping a single dark feather to the ground. She settled in again on his shoulder. That much flying was difficult for her.
What was that?
Come on.
Sixth took his pack and climbed down out of the room. Vathi scrambled to the open hatch.
No! Tell me, what was that?
You saw your corpse.
All about me! Everywhere I looked.
Sok grants that talent.
There is no such talent.
Sixth looked up at her, halfway down the pegs.
You have seen your death. That is what will happen if your friends use that machine. Death, all of us. The Aviar, everyone living here. I do not know why it will happen, but I know that it will.
You've discovered a new Aviar. How? When?
Hand me the lantern.
Looking numb, she obeyed, handing it down. He put it into his teeth and climbed down the pegs to the ground. Then he raised the lantern high, looking down the slope toward the jungle below. The inky jungle at night, like the depths of the ocean. Gokurli fluttered down from above, landing on his other shoulder. He would hide them, hide their minds at least. With that, they had a chance. Vathi scrambled down the pegs behind him, her pack with the strange tube in it over her shoulder.
You have two Aviar. You use them both at once?
My uncle had three.
How is that even possible?
They like trappers. So many questions, so much talking.
Could she not think about what the answers might be before asking?
We're actually going to do this. The jungle at night. I should stay. I should refuse.
You've seen your death if you do?
I've seen what you claim is my death. I don't know anything. A new Aviar. It has been centuries.
She walked after him as he strode down the slope and past his traps, entering the jungle again. His corpse sat at the base of a tree. That made him immediately look for what could kill him here. But Sok's senses seemed to be off. Impending death was upon them all. And it was so overpowering, it seemed to be smothering smaller dangers. He might not be able to rely upon her visions until the machine was destroyed. That worried him. If he was going to cross the island at night, her aid would have been invaluable. The thick jungle canopy seemed to swallow them. It was hot here, even at night. The ocean breezes didn't reach this far inland. That left the air feeling stagnant, and it dripped with the scents of the jungle. Fungus, rotting leaves, the perfumes of flowers. The lantern's light did not seem to extend as far as it should, and Vathi pulled up close to him behind.
Why did you do this before? The other time you went out at night?
More questions. I was wounded. We had to get from one safe camp to the other to recover my uncle's store of antivenom.
Because Sixth hands trembling, had dropped the other flask.
You survived it? Well, obviously you did. I mean, I'm surprised is all.
She seemed to be talking to fill the air. Homeilers did that.
They could be watching us. Nightmare.
They are not.
How can you know? Anything could be out there in that darkness.
If the night moths had seen us, we'd be dead. That is how I know.
He shook his head, sliding out his machete and cutting away a few branches before them. Any could hold death ants skittering across their leaves. In the dark, it would be difficult to spot them, and so brushing against foliage seemed a poor decision.
We won't be able to avoid it.
Sixth led the way down through a gully thick with mud. He had to step on stones to keep from sinking in. Buffy followed with remarkable dexterity for a scribe.
We have to go quickly. I can't cut down every branch in our way.
He hopped off of a stone and onto the bank of the gully, passing his body sinking into the mud. Nearby, however, he spotted a second corpse, so translucent it was nearly invisible. He raised his lantern, hoping it wasn't happening again. Others did not appear, just these two. And the very faint image. Yes, that was a sinkhole there. Sixth fished in his pocket for a seed to give her. She had figured out how to send him help anyway. The fainter images, he would have to watch for those.
Thank you.
That bird of yours? Are there others?
They climbed out of the gully, continuing on, crossing a krill trail in the night. He stopped them just before they wandered into a patch of death ants. Vati looked at the trail of tiny insects moving along their path. They were practically blind, but stumble into them. Well, they weren't the greatest of Pachi's dangers.
Sixth, are there others? Why haven't you brought any chicks to market?
I do not have any chicks.
So you found only the one?
Questions, questions.
Buzzing around him like flies.
Don't be foolish. You would ask the same if you saw someone with a new AVR.
He had tried to keep Sokka secret. For years, he hadn't even brought her with him when he left the island. But with her hurt wing, he hadn't wanted to abandon her. Deep down, he'd known he couldn't keep his secret forever.
There are many like her, but only she has a talent to bestow.
Vati stopped in place as he continued to cut them a path. He turned back, looking at her alone on the new trail. He had given her the lantern to hold.
That's a mainlander bird. That's what I knew it was when I first saw it. But when you said it had a talent, I assumed I had been wrong. I wasn't. It is a mainlander bird.
Sixth turned back and continued cutting.
You brought a mainlander chick to the Pantheon, and it gained the talent.
Vati hurried to keep up, the glow of the lantern tossing his shadow before him as she stepped up behind.
Surely someone else has tried it before. Surely.
He did not know. He had not heard it spoken of, however.
But why would they? The Avia are special. Everyone knows the breeds and what they do. Why assume that a fish would learn to breathe air if raised on land? Why assume a non-Aviar would become one if raised on Pachi?
They continued through the night. Sixth led them around many dangers, though he found that he needed to rely upon Sok's help even more than he would have during the day. Do not follow that stream, which has your corpse bobbing in its waters. Do not touch that tree. The bark is poisonous with rot. Turn from that path. Your corpse shows a death ant bite. Sok did not speak to him, but each message was clear. They seemed more clear than normal, actually. Though these images were faint, almost invisible. When he stopped to let Vati drink from her canteen, he held Sok and found her trembling. She did not peck at him as normal when he enclosed her in his hands. They stood in the small clearing, pure dark all around them, the sky shrouded in clouds. The night moths only did that when they had already made a kill, or when they were seeking to frighten prey. Often, krell herds slept near aviar roosts. Frighten away the birds, and you could sense the krell. Vati had taken out her tube. Not a scroll case, and not something scholarly at all, considering the way she held it as she poured something into its end. She held it like one would hold a weapon. Beneath her feet, Sixth's body lay mangled. Not one of the visions Sok was trying to send him, but one of the ones from the danger. He did not ask after Vati's weapon, not even as she took some kind of short, slender spear and fit it into the top end. No weapon could penetrate the thick skin of a night moth. You either avoided them or you died. Kokurli fluttered down to his shoulder. He seemed confused by the darkness. Why were they out like this at night, when birds normally made no noise?
We must keep moving.
Sixth placed Sok on his shoulder again and took out his machete.
You realize that your bird changes everything.
Lathi shouldered her pack, carrying her tube in the other hand.
There will be a new kind of aviar.
That's the least of it. Sixth, our entire understanding of them is wrong. We assumed that chicks raised off of these islands did not develop their abilities because they were not around others to train them. We assumed that their abilities were part of them, like men have the ability to speak innate, but requiring help from others to develop properly.
So, that can still be the way. Other species can merely be trained to speak.
And your bird? Was it trained by others?
Perhaps.
He did not know everything Sok had done in her life. Of course, he suspected something else. He did not say it. It was a thing of trappers. Beyond that, he was stopped by something. A body on the ground before them. It was not his. He held up a hand immediately, stilling Vathi. That body was relatively fresh. Though the meat had been picked off of much of the skeleton, the clothing still lay strewn about, ripped open by those that feasted upon it. Small fungus-like plants had sprouted around the ground near it, tiny red tendrils reaching up out of the ground to enclose parts of the skeleton. He looked up at the great tree, at the foot of which rested the corpse. The flowers were not in bloom.
What is it? Death ants?
No. Pachi's finger.
Is that some kind of curse?
It is a name.
Sixth stepped forward carefully, inspecting the corpse. Machete, boots, rugged gear. One of his colleagues had fallen. He thought he recognized the man from the clothing, an old trapper named First of the Sky. Sixth's uncle had known him.
Of the person?
Of the tree.
Sixth poked at the clothing of the man, careful of insects that might be lurking inside.
Raise the lamp.
I've never heard of that tree.
They are only on Pachi.
I have read a lot about the flora on these islands.
And you know little still. Here, you are a child. Light.
Vathi raised it for him. He prodded at pockets on the ripped clothing with a stick. He had been killed by a Tuscaran pack. Larger predators, almost as large as a man, that prowled mostly at day. Their movement patterns were normally predictable, unless one happened across one of Pakji's fingers in bloom. There. He found a small book in the man's pocket. Sixth raised it, then backed away. Perhaps he could have stopped Vathi from peering over his shoulder, but he was too interested in the book at the moment. Still, Homeilers stood so close to each other sometimes. They had a whole island, mostly to themselves. Did she need to stand right by his elbow? He checked the first pages, finding a list of dates. Yes, this death was fresh, only a few days old, judging by the last date written down. The pages after that detailed the locations of First safe camps, along with explanations of the traps guarding each one. The last page contained the farewell.
I am First of the Sky, taken by Pachi at last. I have a brother on Suluko. Care for them, rival.
Few words.
Few words were good. Sixth carried a book like this himself, and he had said even less on his last page.
He wants you to care for his family?
Don't be stupid.
Sixth tucked the book away.
In this, them means his birds.
That's actually kind of sweet. I had always heard that trappers were incredibly territorial.
We are. But our birds might die without care. They are accustomed to humans, and are no longer part of their flocks. Better to give them to a rival than to let them die.
Even if that rival is the one who killed you? The traps you set, the ways you try to interfere with one another?
It is our way.
That is an awful excuse.
Vathi looked up at the tree. It was massive, with drooping fronds. At the end of each one was a large closed blossom, as long as two hands put together.
You don't seem worried, though the plant seems to have killed that man.
These are only dangerous when they bloom.
Spores?
No.
Sixth picked up the fallen machete, but left the rest of First's things alone.
Let Pachi claim him.
Sixth scanned the area, ignoring his corpse draped over a log. Sok gave him no direction, so he started out northward, continuing the trek toward the other side of the island.
Sixth?
Vathi hurried to him.
If not spores, then how does the tree kill?
So many questions.
My life is about questions. And about answers. If my people are to work on this island...
He spun on her. Then she stepped back.
It's going to happen. You can't stop it, Sixth. I'm sorry. Perhaps we will be defeated, but others will come.
Because of the ones above.
He turned away and continued to lead through the dark underbrush.
Well, they may spur it, but it will happen without them. The world is changing. One man cannot slow it, no matter how determined.
He stopped in the path.
You cannot change it, Sixth, no matter how determined you are.
His mother's words, some of the last he remembered from her. Sixth continued on his way. The woman followed. He would need her, though a treacherous piece of him whispered that she would be easy to end. With her would go her questions, and more importantly, her answers, the ones he suspected she was very close to discovering.
You cannot change it.
He could not. He hated that he could not, but he could not. Killing this woman would accomplish nothing. Besides, had he sunk so low that he would take a helpless scribe and murder her in cold blood? He would not even do that to another trapper unless they approached his camp and did not retreat.
The blossoms can think.
He turned them away from a mound that showed the Tuscan pack had been rooting there.
The fingers of Pachi. They attract predators like a wounded animal, which has thoughts full of pain and worry. The predators fight one another sometimes, and the tree feeds off of the corpses. That is what you saw growing beneath the man's body.
A plant that broadcasts a mental signature? Are you certain?
Yes.
I need one of those blossoms.
The light shook as she turned to go back. Sixth spun and caught her by the arm.
No, we are not here to collect samples. We must keep moving.
But
you will have another chance. Your people will soon infest this island like maggots on carrion. You will see other trees. Tonight we must go. Dawn is approaching.
Sixth let go of her and turned back to his work. He had judged her wise for a main isler. Perhaps she would listen. She did. She followed behind, walking quietly for a time.
I'm sorry.
It was not dusk when I was born.
Sixth hacked down a swamp vine, then held his breath against the noxious fumes that it released toward him a moment later. They were only dangerous for a few moments.
Excuse me? You were born...
Sixth looked over, meeting her eyes in the frail lantern light.
My mother did not name me for the time of day. It was not dusk, not in the day of my birth. I was named because my mother saw the dusk of our people. The sun will soon set, she often told me. I guess it has finally done just that.
Sixth looked back to Vati. Oddly, she smiled at him. Perhaps she realized he had shared something personal. He had not spoken those words to his uncle. Only his parents had known. He was not certain why he told this scribe from an evil company. A night maw broke through between two trees behind Vati. The enormous beast would have been as tall as a tree if it had stood upright on two legs. Instead, it leaned forward in a prowling posture, two clawed forelegs ripping up the ground as it reached forward its long neck, open beak on the end, razor sharp and deadly. This was the closest he had ever seen one. It looked kind of like a bird, in the same way that a wolf looked like a lapdog. He threw his machete, an instinctive reaction, for he did not have time for thought. He did not have time for fear. That snapping beak, as tall as a door, would have the two of them dead in moments. His machete glanced off the beak, actually cutting it on the side of the head. Sixth leaped for Vati to pull her away, to... Smoke burst into the air from Vati, who stood wide-eyed, having dropped the lantern, oil spilling on the ground. The sudden sound stunned him, and he almost collided with her as the night moth slumped and fell. Sixth found himself on the ground. He had tripped. He scrambled to his feet, backing away from the twitching night maw mere feet in front of him. The light was already dying. He couldn't look toward the fallen lantern, though. He stared at the beast in front of him, all leathery skin that was prickled and bumpy, like that beneath a bird that had lost its feathers. It was dead. She had killed it.
Sixth!
He raised a hand to his forehead, which had belatedly begun to prickle with sweat. His body tense, he felt as if he should be running. He had never wanted to be so close to one of these. Never. She'd actually killed it. He turned toward her, his eyes wide. Vati was trembling, but she covered it well.
Well, that worked. We weren't certain it would, even though we'd prepared these specifically for the night moths.
It's like a cannon. Like from one of the ships. Only in your hands.
Yes.
Sixth turned back toward the beast. He had been wrong earlier. It wasn't dead, not completely. It twitched. He could make out the large hole in its breast as he walked around it. The weapon had fired a spear of some sort that had gone right into its chest. It wasn't dead yet, but it soon would be.
It could kill them all.
He turned, then rushed over to Vathi, taking her by the arm.
With those weapons, we could kill them all, every Nightmaw. Maybe the Shadows, too.
Well, yes, it has been discussed. However, they are important parts of the ecosystem on these islands. Removing the apex predators could have undesirable results.
Undesirable results? They'd be gone. All of them. I don't care what other problems you think it would cause. They would all be dead.
Vathi picked up the lantern.
I thought trappers were connected to nature.
We are. That's how I know we would all be better off without any of these things. No more Nightmaws. What a different world it would be.
You are disabusing me of many romantic notions about your kind, Six. I wish we had time. Nobody has ever been able to study one of these up close.
With those weapons, you should have plenty of chances.
Sixth held up his arm. Kokurli fluttered down from high branches. In the chaos and explosion, Sixth had not seen the bird fly away. Sok still clung to his shoulder with a death grip, her claws digging into his skin through the cloth. He hadn't noticed. Kokurli landed on his arm.
It wasn't your fault. They prowled the night. Even if they cannot sense our minds, they can hear us, smell us.
Nightmaws did not have good vision, nor was their hearing excellent. Their sense of smell, however, was said to be incredible. This one had come up the trail behind them. It must have crossed their path and followed it.
Dangerous.
His uncle always claimed the Nightmaws were growing smarter, that they knew they could not hunt men only by their minds.
I should have taken us across more streams. There just isn't time.
His body lay wherever he looked, draped across a rock, hanging from the vines of trees, slumped beneath a dying Nightmaw's claw. The beast trembled once more in what seemed a final way, then amazingly it lifted its gruesome head. Sixth stepped back, despite himself. He twisted his head to the side, stumbling backward, looking out into that deep blackness. At least five other beasts sounded in the night. That sound. He had been trained to recognize that sound as the sound of death.
We're going.
Sixth stalked across the ground and pulled Vathi away from the dying beast, which had lowered its head and fallen silent. It might be dead. It no longer moved. She did not resist as he pulled her away, though she did look over her shoulder at the monster.
Sixth?
Was it closer?
Oh, Pachi. No, not this. Come.
He pulled her faster and reached for his machete. He had thrown it. He did not go back for it. He took out the one he had gathered from his fallen rival and began to hack at leaves, only when necessary. He could no longer worry about brushing against death ants. A greater danger was coming.
Are those getting closer?
Sixth did not answer. It was a question, but one he did not know the answer to. He released her hand, moving more quickly, almost at a trot, faster than he ever wanted to go through the jungle, day or night.
Sixth. Will they come? To the call of the dying one? Is that something they do?
How should I know? I have never known one of them to be killed before.
Sixth saw the tube, again carried over her shoulder, lit by the light of the lantern she carried, though his instinct screamed at him to keep moving. He paused.
The weapon.
He felt a fool. They had a weapon that could kill Nightmaws. That such a thing existed still amazed him.
Your weapon? You can use it again?
Yes. Once more.
Once more?
Yes. I only brought three of the spears this thing fires, and enough powder for three shots. I tried firing one at the shadow. It didn't do much.
One more attack.
So his instincts were right. He spoke no further, towing her into the jungle. How did one escape Nightmaws? His aviar clung to him, one on each shoulder. He had to leap over his corpse periodically as they traversed a gulch and came up the other side.
How do you escape them?
He remembered his uncle's training.
You don't draw their attention in the first place.
They were fast. Kokurli would hide his mind from them, but if they picked up his trail at the dead one...
Water.
He stopped in the night, turning right, then left. Where would he find a stream? Pachi was an island. Fresh water came from rainfall, mostly. The largest lake, the only one really, was up the wedge toward the peak. Pachi was shaped something like a wedge. Along the eastern side, the island rose to some heights with cliffs on all sides. It was not terribly tall, but was elevated farther than the rest of the island. Rainfall collected there in Pachi's eye and could not escape except slowly. The river, his tears, It was a dangerous place to go, with Vathi in tow. Their path had skirted the slope up the heights, heading across the island toward the northern beach. It would only be a small diversion. That spurred him on.
Pachi, forgive me.
He seized Vathi's hand, towing her in a slightly different direction. She did not complain, though she did keep looking over her shoulder. He ran. He ran as he had never expected to do on Pachi, wild, reckless. Leaping over troughs, around fallen logs coated in moss, through the dark underbrush, scaring away meekers and startling aviar slumbering in the branches above. It was foolish. It was crazy. He did not fear death to insect bites or falling vines. Somehow he knew the kings of Pachi hunted him. Lesser dangers would not dare steal from their betters. Vathi followed with difficulty. Those skirts were troubled, but Sixth had to occasionally stop and cut their way through underbrush. Urgent, frantic, he did so. He expected her to keep up, and she did. A piece of him, buried deep beneath the terror, was impressed. This woman would have made a fantastic tracker. Instead, she would probably destroy them. They were close. He hacked through a dense patch of undergrowth and ran on, sweat streaming down the sides of his face. Jostling light came from the lantern behind, clutched by Vathi, and the scene before him as he ran was one of horrific shadows dancing on the jungle's boughs, leaves, ferns, and rocks.
This is your fault, Pachi! Why must you try to kill us, those who protect you? We are your priests, and yet you hate us! You hate all!
Sixth's uncle had explained that Pachi needed to be deadly to keep away the unwelcome, the unworthy. And yet, Vathi was nearly as good as any trapper, though she had not set foot on Pachi until recently. Did that make her worthy? Did that make her welcome? Sixth broke from the jungle and out onto the banks of the river. Small by mainland standards, he had once seen a river there so wide no man could have jumped it. Still, this would do. He led Vathi right into it, splashing into the cold waters. He turned upstream. What else could he do? Downstream was to lead closer to those sounds, the calls of death.
Of the dusk! Of the dusk!
He led Vathi upriver. The waters came only to their calves, bitter cold. The coldest water on the island, though he did not know why. They slipped and scrambled as they ran, best they could, upriver. This passed them through some narrows, with lichen-covered rock walls on either side, twice as tall as a man. They burst out into the basin, halfway up the heights, a place men did not go, a place he had visited only once. A cool emerald lake rested here, sequestered. Sixth towed Vathi to the side, out of the river, toward some brush. Perhaps she would not see. He huddled down with her, raising a finger to his lips, then turning down the light of the lantern she still held. Night moths could not see well, but perhaps the dim light would help, in more ways than one. They waited there, on the shore of the small lake, hoping that the water had washed away their scent, hoping the night moths would grow confused and be unable to track them. For one thing about this place was that the basin had steep walls, hidden as it was in Pachi's depths. There was no way out other than the river, and if the night moths came up it, Sixth and Vathi would be trapped. The creatures had reached the river. Sixth waited in almost near darkness, and so squeezed his eyes shut. He prayed to Pachi, whom he loved, whom he hated. So she had seen. Of course she had. She was a seeker, a learner, a questioner.
Why must men ask so many questions?
Sixth, there are aviar here. Hundreds of them.
Even as they awaited death itself, however, she saw and could not help speaking.
Have you seen them? What is this place? So many juveniles, barely able to fly.
They come here. Every bird from every island. In their youth, they must come here.
He opened his eyes, looking up at the rim of the basin. He had turned down the lantern, but it was still bright enough to see them roosting there. Some stirred at the light and the sound. The night moths had not left the banks of the river. They were searching.
Every bird from every island, they all come here, to this place. Are you certain?
Yes.
It was a thing that trappers knew. You could not capture a bird before it had visited Pachi.
Otherwise, it would be able to bestow no talent.
They come here. We knew they migrated between islands. Why do they come here? What is the point?
Was there any point in holding back now? She would figure it out. Huddled here in the night though they were, she would figure it out. Still, he did not speak.
Let her do so.
They gain their talents here, don't they? How? Is it where they are trained? Is this how you made a bird who was not an aviar into one? You brought a hatchling here, and then...
Vati frowned, raising her lantern.
I recognize those trees. They are the ones you called Pachi's fingers.
A dozen of them grew here, the largest concentration on the island. And beneath them, their fruit littered the ground, much of it eaten, some of it only halfway so, bites taken out by birds of all stripes. Vati saw him looking and frowned.
The fruit?
Worms.
It's not the bird. It never has been. It's a parasite. They carry a parasite that bestows talents. That's why those raised over the islands cannot gain the abilities, and why a mainland bird you brought here could.
Yes.
This changes everything, Six. Everything.
Yes. Of the dusk. Born during that dusk? A bringer of it.
What had he done? They had decided to search upriver. They were clever, more clever than men off of the islands thought them to be. Vati turned toward the small river canyon.
I am trying to protect you. I need to stop the men and the device. I know it. Why? Why do you hunt me?
But he knew so much.
Too much.
More than any man had known, for he had asked questions.
Men and their questions.
They're coming for us, aren't they?
The answer seemed obvious. He did not answer.
No. I won't die with this knowledge, Sixth. I won't. There must be a way.
There is. So, I finally pay for it.
Sixth took Sok carefully in his hand and placed her on Vati's shoulder. He pried Kokurli free, too.
Why? What are you doing?
I will go as far as I can.
Sixth handed Kokurli toward her. The bird bit with annoyance at his hands, never strong enough to draw blood.
You will need to hold him. He will try to follow me.
No! Wait. We can hide in the lake. They
will find us. It isn't deep enough by far to hide us.
But you can't...
They are nearly here, woman.
He forced Kokurli into her hands.
The men of the company will not listen to me if I tell them to turn off the device. You are smart. You can make them stop. You can reach them. With Kokurli, you can reach them. Be ready to go.
She looked at him, stunned, but she seemed to realize that there was no other way. She stood, holding Kokurli in two hands as he stepped back into the river. He would have to go quickly to reach the end of the canyon before they arrived. If he could draw them out into the jungle even a short ways to the south, Vati could slip out. As he entered the stream, his visions of death finally vanished. No more corpses bobbing in the water, lying on the banks. Sok had realized what was happening. He started to run. One of Pachi's fingers, growing right next to the mouth of the canyon, was blooming.
Wait!
He should not have stopped as Vati yelled at him. He should have continued on, for time was so slim. However, the sight of that flower, along with her yell, made him hesitate.
The flower?
Vati ran up, letting go of Kokurli, who immediately flew to his shoulder. Vati pulled the flower off. It was as large as a man's head, with a large bulging part at the center.
A flower that can think. A flower that can draw the attention of predators.
Both of their heads turned toward the tube, her weapon, which lay sticking from her pack on the bank of the river. Sixth pulled out his rope as she ran for it. Then he ripped the flower from its branch. He tied the rope to it as Vati ran up with her weapon, the spear sticking out slightly from the end. Sixth tied the other end of his rope to it. He could see their shadows. He stumbled back from Vati as she crouched down, setting the weapon's butt against the ground, and pulled a lever at the base. Aviar all around the rim of the basin took wing. A storm of feathers ensued, and through the middle of it, Vati's spear shot into the air, towing the rope and with it the flower. That arced out over the canyon into the night. Sixth grabbed her by the shoulder and pulled her back along the river into the lake itself. They slipped into the shallow water, Kokurli on his shoulder, Sok on hers. They left a lantern burning, giving a quiet light to the suddenly empty basin. The lake was not deep, 2 or 3 feet. Even crouching, it didn't cover them completely. Night Moss stopped in the canyon. His lantern light showed a couple of them in the shadows, large as huts, turning and watching the sky. They were smart, but like the Meekers, not as smart as men.
Pachi, please, She is right. The secret cannot remain secret forever. Not with the way the world changes. They will get out. I will carry them and do what I can with them.
The Night Maws turned back down the canyon, following the mental signature broadcast by the flowering plant. Sixth counted to 100, then slipped from the waters. Bothy, sodden in her skirts, did not speak as she grabbed the lantern. They left the weapon, its shots expended. The Night Maws grew further and further away as Sixth led the way out of the canyon. Then directly north, slightly downslope. He kept expecting yells to turn and follow. They did not. The company fortress was a horridly impressive sight. A work of logs and canyons right at the edge of the water, guarded by an enormous iron-hulled ship. Smoke rose from it, the burning of morning cook fires. Sixth sat on a rock, a short distance from what appeared to be a dead shadow, its mountainous corpse draped half in the water, half out. He did not enter the fortress. Better to stay out here, near the dead shadow, even though his skin prickled as he looked at it. His own corpse lay in the shallows beside it. Sok rested on his shoulder, dozing, and Kokurli was on a branch closer to the forest. He seemed in good spirits. As Sixth waited, his corpse slowly vanished from the shadows, fading like a shadow blending with darkness in the fall of night. Vati finally left the fortress. Alone, thankfully, though two more men joined the guards at the gate. All bore weapons similar to the one she had used to kill the Night Maw. She had not changed. Her muddied skirts were stuck with twigs, her hair a mess. Her eyes were alight. She stepped up to him. The surf washed against Pachi's rocks. Sixth could not decide if he found it a violent sound or a peaceful one.
It is done.
But he already knew that it was. The vision had ended. The danger had passed.
Yusto was not pleased at my survival, though he could not say so. He was reluctant to stop the device, but my authority supersedes his own.
Sixth nodded. His eyes fell again on the dead shadow.
Come into our fortress. Get some rest, some food.
I must return and check on my area.
They will survive another day without you. They live on this island for weeks at a time without your presence.
He did not reply.
Sixth, we could use your knowledge, your wisdom.
I know. You could.
Sixth turned back toward Pachi. He could not interpret events of the night. Had the Night Maws been Pachi seeking to cover his secrets? Or had the flower been redemption sent by his father? Which was Sixth?
Condemned or rescued? Neither? Both? What happened to the one above? The one who died while eating? The one to whom those devices of yours belonged?
His body was reclaimed by the others. Why do you ask?
I do not think he is really dead. They have tricked you.
Vati raised an eyebrow at him.
The machine is a trap. They expected you to use it, and they knew the damage it would cause.
That's an interesting theory.
Vati studied him in the morning light. She looked exhausted. The thing she had been through. It had been less than a day since his arrival back on Pachi, and yet so much had happened.
It is true. You were to use it, and in so doing, endanger the area.
That makes no sense.
It does. The ones above seek an excuse to come down and take control of these islands, just as you have sought an excuse to do the same. If they could prove to themselves, perhaps to those who watch them, that you are dangerous to the area, they would come and rescue them to protect a resource. Is that not the argument you used? They will use the same.
You don't know them, Sixth. They're strange. Though they look like us, they're as different from you and me as, well, as we are from the Aviar.
Yes, so different. The Aviar used the worms, we used the Aviar, and now the ones above seek to use us. It is the way of things. I am right. This was a trap. I can see traps. It is what I do.
Perhaps.
Sixth climbed off of his rock.
I have brought you back to safety. Farewell.
Sixth.
She seemed to search for words. That seemed odd for a Homeiler. They always seemed to have plenty of words piled atop one another, ready to spew out. Of course, those were the wrong words. Right words were far more difficult. He understood her silence then, as he walked away from her back into the jungle. His trip back to his safe camp was accomplished with far less difficulty and far less speed than had been required by frantic crossing during the night. He tried to get into the rhythm of trapping, the familiar motions that had been his companions for many years. However, the jungle looked different to him now. It had been conquered. Oh, the outpost was new, but the secrets were out and the peak had been crossed. By the time he reached his safe camp, dusk was again approaching. He did only a cursory check of things here before finding himself striking out toward the beach. He arrived as night settled, and despite Kokurli's complaints, he shoved his canoe back out into the waters and climbed aboard. He rowed all the way out into the waters, where he could look upon Pachi as a whole. He sat there, dark waves undulating beneath his ship as the moons rose and the stars came out. Pachi, father, killer and provider, a dark wedge in the night, crammed with life, so much that it seemed to spill out sometimes. Sixth slept on his canoe that night. In the morning, while the sun rose behind him, he paddled around the island and came back to the fortress. He landed and went to its gates, demanding to speak to Vathi. She came to the gates, changed, refreshed. She smiled as she saw him.
I will come in, and I will help you. But you will do something for me.
What?
Eventually, the ones above will take some of the AVR with them. They will find a way around their laws. They will get what they want. It is inevitable.
You are probably right.
When those birds go, I go with them. Into the above. I don't care what it takes. You will find a way. If you send AVR, you send me.
There has been talk of sending an ambassador with them to their worlds in the above. It was thought a politician or a scientist should be chosen.
It was not a question, so Sixth did not reply.
A trapper, though. That makes a kind of sense in and of itself. Who better to explore where none of us have yet gone? I will try. I cannot promise anything, Sixth, but you have my word to try.
She held out her hand to him. He considered it as he would a cutaway vine hanging from a tree ahead. His corpse appeared at her feet. Danger. He took Vathi's hand anyway and stepped into the fortress.